Living in the country, you learn to think outside the square, be creative and fix things, but using the resources that you've got, you don't necessarily have to spend a lot of money on it.
There seems to be a deficit of conversations around the whys of living away from the convenience of town, spending precious time on trying to grow your own food when you can just buy it in the shops, and if choosing this lifestyle really is making a difference on our characters and that of our families. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast. We are passionate about and love having conversations on what impact truly experiencing country living, true education, and agriculture can have on our lives. We hope and pray that by us sharing these conversations with people from all different backgrounds and experiences, that you can feel equipped from the practical advice and inspired by the stories to continue or pick up where you left off.
Welcome to another episode of Cultivate Podcast. We have Sheldon from New Zealand that I'm going to hand you over to in a moment. These are from some discussions and presentations that have been happening in New Zealand. Listening to Sheldon speak from his experience as a fourth generation farmer is a unique experience in of itself. To see how he thinks and what lessons he has learnt from his experience and how he says and shares that in his story. Sheldon shares in his story from his childhood, you know, all the way from chasing frogs and playing in floodlands to the farm and how he grew up on the farm and his parents and that transition into his farm management and becoming his livelihood.
Yeah, he brings out some really key lessons, hey? Like some things that really stood out to me was how they learnt and practiced resourcefulness, how to use and work with what they had, how to think outside the square, how to have fun, but learn to work hard at the same time. They're not separate. They can be combined together. Yeah, about being task orientated and how it's just like a great place for families to work together, living in the country and having agriculture as a central aspect of that. We were blessed as we listened to this recording, and we know you guys will be too.
Just before we hand you over to Sheldon, I think we should define kumara, which is, if you're a New Zealander, you know what that is. But for the rest of us from Australia, a kumara is a sweet potato.
Good one. Yes. And how cool was his story about beekeeping? I love how he was sharing how they had hundreds of hives and a two-frame manual extractor. Anyone who's done beekeeping before knows that that is a lot of hard work, because we had 40 hives at the max of the time that we were doing it. And we had a 12-frame electric extractor. Anyway, I just think it's really cool that you can get a lot of results if you are willing to work hard. And his story just showcases that really well. So we don't want to give away the story, but look out for some of those key points, because there's some really cool experiences. So enjoy.
Well, I guess I could begin just regarding my experience in the country, sort of my journey on the land. And it's not really so much about me as just trying to weave things that I've found really helpful and beneficial about living in the country through the story of my journey. Because I grew up, my parents were, I guess, third generation farmers on the farm just down at Tokitoka. You would have come past that pointy mountain. You can probably see it from here, can you? Can you see Toke from there?
Yep.
You should be able to see it from out in the orchard. So I grew up just down the road down there. Like I say, my parents were third generation on the land, so it's been in the family for, it's got to be close to 100 years if it isn't. And on the census questions, I guess, my dad would write down mixed farmer. So we had a lot of stuff going on the farm when I was young. From chooks and ducks, we had probably about 30 beehives. For my fifth birthday, I remember getting a hat and veil for bees and going out and robbing the bees with Dad, you know, when I was 5 years old. So that was actually, having bees is one of the highlights of childhood, really. We got to stay up late, you know, and we had a small shed down the back of the orchard where we'd process the honey. So we'd go robbing the bees, get the boxes, and then after dark, so the bees were quieter, less, they'd usually gone home hopefully by then most of them, keep them out of the honey house. And then we'd go in there, and Dad had a big pan that he had a stick running across, and then he'd put the frames on that and get an electric knife and take the caps off the frames. And of course, one of us kids would hold the frame while he was doing that, the second frame, because the extractor took two frames. And the other one of us would be, I had four siblings, but just three siblings. So there's four of us children. But my older sister and I usually used to do it. The two younger ones were usually a bit young for that. And we'd go down and do it. And one of us would be extracting, winding the handle on the extractor to get the honey out. And the other one would hold the second frame for Dad. And of course, we'd be dipping our fingers in the honey and the cappings and eating it and things like that. So great fun. Good memories doing that. We were brought up lacto-ovo vegetarian, like eating eggs and milk, as well as plant-based. We always had a house cow. My nana used to milk the house cow when we were kids, and so we'd drink plenty of milk, use it in all the cooking and things like that as well. And we always had a really good home veggie garden, planting things like peas and beans and carrots and lettuce and potatoes and corn and all that kind of thing. We even introduced it as part of the school agriculture day. I don't know if you're familiar with calf club days that used to happen. I'm not sure how much they happen anymore. I think there's still some going, some around. It's been a lot more challenging with Nate and COVID on top of that, but certainly growing up we had calf club days at school, and my parents were part of getting a gardening competition going as well, and they'd have a couple of judges going around. Any children that wanted to participate would put in a home garden, and a couple of parents would go around and judge these home gardens and have a cup or a prize for them. So that was really just to encourage the children to get into gardening at home. And we'd go down the river. Actually, I don't know if you've seen it out in the orchard there, the peas in the garden there. We did it this year because Peter wanted to grow them, and Kate's getting into a bigger home garden, I suppose, there. And just to stake the peas, we just got flax sticks, the heads of flax from down the river, and just poke them in the ground and make a place for the peas to climb up on. Just really simple, simple stuff you can do with what you've got. So I learnt that as a child. Yeah, that's what we had, to stake stuff. You never go to Bunnings or Mitre 10 or anything like that to buy garden stakes. You go and get some tea tree or some flax sticks or something else and stake your plants with what you've got. You know, those she oaks over there would be brilliant for that. You know, some of the straighter. Thinner ones, you just go and cut a few down and use it for a garden stake if you want them, whatever's on hand. So you learn to be quite resourceful and work with what you've got. And it is really helpful with problem solving, getting stuff going. We used to tease Dad a bit or joke with him a bit about what he couldn't fix with a tin lid and a rubber glove, you know, the old edgy preserving jar lids. What he couldn't fix using that, a Kuma rubber glove and some baling twine. Just getting stuff going or making things work out of what's at hand. So living in the country, you learn a lot of innovative, you learn to think outside the square, be creative and fix things, but using the resources that you've got, you don't necessarily have to spend a lot of money on it. I don't think my parents will mind you saying, but when they first got married, they didn't have a lot. They didn't have a lot of money. They moved into the old house down there at Tokatoka. It had been a hay shed. And they renovated it room by room, taking out fencing wire, tractor tires, hay, birds' nests, rubbish, and moving in room by room. They sold scrap metal for grocery money and built the place from there. So Yeah, a lot of innovation, a lot of hard work. But we always had a good orchard as well. They planted a lot of fruit trees, peaches, nectarines, figs, citrus, plums, grapes, feijoas, apples, pears, guavas, loquats. On it goes. There's lots of variety. So I grew up, building huts in the hay shed and picking up hay and playing in flooded paddocks and February floods that we used to have, chasing frogs around the frog dam and learning to work as well, learning to work hard. It was a valued attribute of living in the country. I learned to be unafraid of physical hard work. And we were taught with various methods. One I remember that we appreciated, I guess, as children, for what it's worth. It was task-oriented, and even back then, like for as long as I can remember, my parents have grown kumaras and melons commercially. And so back in those days, harvesting kumaras, they were ploughed out of the ground, and you would bend your back and scratch them out of the dirt. And my dad and my nana, and they sometimes hired workers, but usually it was just them. Maybe my auntie helped sometimes, generally family or maybe one other person. They'd be scratching them, and then us kids would pick them up into old wooden boxes, about that by that and about that deep. We'd have thousands of them, and the whole crop was stored in those wooden boxes. So after scratching the kumaras all day, Dad would go and pick up the boxes that us kids had filled. So to learn to work, if you couldn't do 10 boxes, you didn't get paid. It was that easy. Like, if you started and you didn't get to at least 10, and this was sometimes after school, so you might have 1 or 2 hours. It might be on a Sunday, so you might have a bit more time. But this is when we were quite young. I remember the system being implemented. Up to 20 boxes, we would get 10 cents a box. Then from 20 to 50, it would be 15 cents a box. From 50 to 100 would be 20 cents a box. And then after 100, it would be 50 cents a box. So I think it worked out roughly about $16 for the first 100, and then you started making real money after that. I remember being the first one of our family and cousins and kids that helped doing that to break the 100. I did 128 boxes one Sunday, and I thought I was Christmas, and I was 8 years old. So yeah, we learnt early. I remember one year down here when we came here, jumping a little bit in time, but we came here and it would have been about 2003 or so. Harvesting then, and mud everywhere. Like, you couldn't pull a harvester. It was ploughing again and really hard conditions, scratching. My oldest daughter was almost 4 at the time, and we'd taught her to put her toys away in the box. We had this one of those golden books, I think. It had this thing in the box. We put the blocks, the dolls go in the crib, teddy bear sits on the chair, puts on his bright blue bib. And so we made up our own one. In the buckets we put the kumaras, the calves go in the shed. Then it's off for dinner time story and into bed. But at less than 4 years old, I got my daughter out there picking up kumaras into buckets, and we'd tip them into bins. These are the bigger bins you probably saw coming in by then. And she completed a bin by herself with Dad, and I would go and empty the buckets. We'd be scratching in the mud, putting them on the top, and then she would do the ones that we'd scratched sort of 3 days earlier that were drying out, knock the mud off them and put them in the buckets, and she did enough buckets to fill a bin. A bin is roughly 500 kilos when it's full of kumaras.
Is it a cubic?
Yeah, it'd be just over a meter. So it weighs about half a ton. Yeah, from picking up stuff. Yeah, so she was out helping, just helping Dad. And it's great, it's a great place for families to work together. Just yesterday. I had my young fella Peter down the back there picking up buttercup squash with me, and he was catching it, we were playing catch, he was catching them, learning to catch, and they're only small, so it's easy for him, and I was just sort of a 2 meters away, and we're just playing catch, but he's helping. He's out helping Dad, and it was great help too. I mean, I picked up, I don't know, it would have been 15 crates times 25 kilos, so that's getting up there, isn't it? It's getting up toward half a ton that we picked up last night, yeah, just out helping Dad. So yeah, working together, and it's great team building stuff for the family. But yeah, learning to work was task oriented, so that you learn to complete the task. You learn that work or reward for work is dependent on what you get done. I mean, we get paid here for getting stuff done. If you don't get stuff done, there's no pay. And so you develop a work ethic that's transferable to whatever you take on in life. You don't get paid by the hour, and the job isn't determined by the clock. It's task oriented, and it's a fantastic way to learn a good work ethic.
Fantastic way to make people want to work faster if they want to get paid more.
That's right. Yeah. I remember several years ago. It was 2018 actually. We had another really tough year in harvesting kumaras. Really tough. And so it was just taking us too long to get them out. And I asked the crew, do you guys think you can work a bit harder? Because we're never going to get these out before they go rotten in the ground if we don't. You can't find workers. No one wants to do it. Every other grower's in the same predicament. So impossible to find more staff, really. And we're just going to have to toughen up and do the job, you know. So I said, look, I timed them. I had probably six or so people working with me, and I put the clock on them. They didn't know, but it took 11 and a half man hours to do one row that was about 300 meters long. I timed myself. I did a row in 2.5 hours, right? By myself. So not to make myself sound good or anything, but I take it on as a job. As you know, I pretend like I'm an athlete, like aim to be a quality athlete when I'm working. This is not just drudgery, this is challenge yourself, and this is do the best you can and hook in and do it, you know. As if you're competing in a sport. Yeah, it's fun. But so anyway, I said, look, I'll be $40 an hour. These rows are worth $100. You got to do two a day, or you're back on $18 an hour, I think was the wages at the time. So I said, you know, if you can work as hard as I can, you keep the quality up, don't leave them behind, get it done right, and you can be $40 an hour. And a couple of them took it on. Well, several of them took it on, actually. And some of them only did their two rows and then went home. That was enough. And others tried a bit harder and earned a bit more, you know. But instead of earning, I don't know, on $18 an hour for an 8-hour day, they're sort of, what is it, $140 or something, they're up to $200. Just put in a bit more effort. So, it's things like that help with work ethic and like I say, getting stuff done, because I need the stuff out. If it gets left in the ground, like I say, it goes rotten as the winter's coming on.
Thanks for listening to the Cultivate podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you find us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our mailing list by the links below so you don't miss out. And if you have a moment, we'd love it if you could leave a review or tell a friend. See you next time.